KPFK Pacifica Radio. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump, for months, has been laying the groundwork to contest the election results in November, making clear that he will not accept defeat under any circumstances. His campaign has openly referred to his supporters as an army and sent mailers to patriots promising that they can join the Trump army in exchange for a donation and the prize of a camouflage hat. But now, with his COVID-19 diagnosis, Trump's plans to steal the election may be thwarted. Still, his signaling to the Proud Boys hate group of armed men is a troubling sign that he may be willing to unleash paramilitary forces onto Democratic Party supporters at the polls in order to retain power. My guest is Marjorie Cohn, Professor Emerita at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law. She's also a writer for Truthout, and her latest piece there is called Trump Needs Accomplices at Every Level of Government to Pull Off a Coup. Welcome to the program, Marjorie.
Thanks, Sonali.
It seems so strange that you and I are talking about paramilitary, coup, and all of these words that we often reserve for other nations, and we're using these terms in reference to the United States. What have we come to indeed? Why do you use the word coup when talking about Trump's plans for the election?
Well, Trump has indicated in no uncertain terms that if he does not win the election, then he will not accept the results. He has indicated his intent to manipulate, indeed to steal, the presidential election in the event that Joe Biden wins. With no evidence whatsoever to back him up, Donald Trump has been screaming voter fraud and mail-in ballots are going to lead to fraud and animals and dead people will get votes. And every single study that's been done, including his own, have shown no evidence of voter fraud. It's minuscule. It's not even on the charts. And he has also alarmingly refused to commit to a peaceful transfer of power. And this is where the danger of a coup comes in. And as you said, he orders his right-wing militias armed with assault weapons to stand back and stand by. And he has an army of people that he's recruiting, all able-bodied men and women, to prevent the election from being stolen by Democrats. Now, progressives, a coalition of progressive organizations, has actually recruited more than 6,000 election defenders. And it's not clear what Trump's army is being mobilized to do, whether they're going to go to the polls with their guns. It's very, very frightening, Sonali.
And of course, what can unarmed activists or poll watchers do in the face of armed men? It is certainly frightening. One of the things that people have raised, and Washington Post raised this quite interestingly, was that if you go back to that time earlier this summer, when the protests against the George Floyd killing took place around the country, but specifically in Washington, D.C., in the lead up to that infamous incident where the Lafayette Square was cleared of protesters very violently, Trump essentially pulled off what the Post called a red army, red state army. He called upon the governors of Republican states to come to Washington, D.C. to amass at the Capitol in the face of protesters. So, you know, setting aside the Proud Boys, Trump was able to actually call upon elements of the U.S. official military.
Well, Trump did not actually invoke the Insurrection Act, although he's threatened to, which would actually enable him to bring out military troops. And I realized at the time that he brought his National Guard, Washington, D.C. National Guard, and he's also sent some federal agents to Portland, for example, that he wasn't sending active duty troops. Because he knows that they have a duty under the Uniform Code of Military Justice to obey lawful orders and to disobey unlawful orders. And that's what we're facing here if he gives the military orders to clear out protesters who are protesting his attempted coup after the election, if Biden wins, there are a number of military leaders who have said that they would resign, that they would not follow those orders. And so Trump's ability to pull off a coup, a successful coup d'etat, and I can't believe we're talking about this either, it depends upon the military following his commands, and it's not at all clear that they'll do that.
Your article is entitled that Trump needs accomplices at every level of government. So that's setting aside the military. So which are these accomplices? I imagine chief among them would be Attorney General William Barr, who is basically the nation's top cop, who gets to decide whether certain, you know, something is going to be legal or not, and whether or not to side with Trump.
Well, I have no doubt that Barr is going to enable everything, or try to enable everything that Trump does, because he has been Trump's lackey all along. But he really doesn't have power to declare something legal or illegal. The Office of Legal Counsel and the Department of Justice can issue a white paper with their opinion, but ultimately it will be up to the courts. And so what we're talking about is, at a minimum, Congress and the courts. The problem here is that there is a necessity, in order to win the election, a candidate has to receive 270 electoral votes, and that's the Electoral College. We all know about that. And yet the Trump campaign has issued orders that that states with Republican leadership actually report what they want. And not necessarily report to the Electoral College the number of electoral votes based upon the popular vote. And so if this happens, ultimately, if no candidate gets 270 votes because of this fancy footwork, which is probably illegal by the Trump lackeys in Congress, or rather in the states, then it goes into the House of Representatives, and people might think, oh, phew, that's great. The House of Representatives has a majority of Democrats. Well, that's a majority of members in the House, but they vote by states, and each state has one vote. And there are more red states than blue states, because the blue states have the large population bases, but there are more red states in the country that are more rural and are more right wing. And so we could have a constitutional crisis, Sonali, that could end up in the Supreme Court. There's a lot of ambiguous law on this. It's not really clear what would happen. And that's why Trump has stated that he wants Amy Coney Barrett, his nominee for the Supreme Court, to be rushed, her confirmation to be rushed, so that she is in place on the court by Election Day, so that she can help him steal the election. And keep in mind that Barrett worked on Bush v. Gore. She wrote briefs, she did research to hand, where a 5-4 majority, right-wing majority of the Supreme Court handed the election to George W. Bush, even though the Florida Supreme Court, there were a few hundred votes, 500 or 600 votes apart, Al Gore and George W. Bush. And the Florida Supreme Court said, let's have a manual recount. And the Supreme Court, usually states' rights, right, said, oh, no, we are going to stop the counting. And they basically handed the election to George W. Bush. Now, there's another chink or kink here, I guess you would say. And that is that Mitch McConnell, who is Trump's other, you know, he's got Barr on one hand and Mitch McConnell on the other.
He's the other enabler, I guess.
Exactly. And McConnell wants to rush this confirmation through the Senate Judiciary Committee and then the Senate in line with what Trump wants. He wants Barrett on the court by Election Day. But that may not happen, because two of the Republican members of the Senate Judiciary Committee have tested positive for COVID, and another Republican senator has tested positive for COVID. So that's three that presumably could not show up in person. And the Senate Judiciary Committee, they need to show up in person to have a quorum.
But Mitch McConnell says that he wants to do it all virtually.
Well, that would be interesting. He might do that. He might do that. Susan Collins has said she will vote no on Barrett. We'll see if she really does that. She has waffled before on the Kavanaugh nomination. But Murkowski has said she doesn't think there should be a rushed confirmation before the election, but who knows if she'll vote no. And in Arizona, Martha McSally may well lose to Mark Kelly, a Democrat, who would be in place, I think, by the end of November. And so that's another Republican vote that McConnell...
That's a special election, yeah.
Right, right. So it's not clear whether he would have the votes to rush this confirmation through. And also, Mitch McConnell has said that he wants unanimous consent for an adjournment to basically wait 2 weeks so that people can get over the COVID virus, the Republicans. And it remains to be seen whether or not Chuck Schumer and the Democrats are going to play hardball and make that difficult and put up roadblocks. The Republicans have had no compunction at all about playing hardball all along, and we'll see if the Republicans stand up to Mitch McConnell and try to prevent this nomination from being rushed through. Amy Coney Barrett, the virtual opposite of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And with her on the court, not only would there be a better chance of handing the election to Trump, but also there are two cases that are going to be submitted to oral argument, be heard by the high court in November. One is the Affordable Care Act. It could actually throw out the Affordable Care Act, and millions of Americans could lose their health care. And Barrett is very clear. She thinks it should be overturned. And another case that pits the civil rights of non-discrimination rights and civil rights of LGBTQ folks against religious rights. And that's also going to be heard as well. And she is a radical right winger who is a member, I've written about this as well. She's a member of a cult, People of Praise. She has said before that the reason to have a legal career is to do God's work. She's had no compunction about that, although she's tried to walk that back a bit. But she considers herself to be a Scalia clone. She clerked for Scalia, and that is her model justice. Now, Chief Justice John Roberts has turned out to be something of a swing vote, even though he's a right winger. He voted with the Democrats when Ginsburg was on the court to uphold the Affordable Care Act. And he also voted to strike down a restriction on abortion, voting with the liberals, making a 5-4 majority, because the identical issue had been decided 4 years before by the court. And he believes in stare decisis, which means he believes in precedent, that the Supreme Court should follow its precedent. Amy Coney Barrett doesn't have much use for stare decisis. She's said so in so many words. So with her on the court, and she's, I think, 48 years old, we're talking about maybe four decades of a very right-wing court. It was very delicately balanced before. It's 5-3 now toward the right wingers, and it would be five to three, and it would be 6-3. Ginsburg is no longer with us. It would be a 6-3 radical right wing majority if Coney Barrett joined the court. So this is a very, very consequential nomination.
Why wouldn't the Democrats use their power to prevent McConnell from getting his unanimous consent? Let's just go through that for a minute. He wants to adjourn the Senate for 2 weeks in order to then keep to his timeline for confirming Amy Coney Barrett. If the Democrats were to simply choose to not vote and to give him that unanimous consent, what would it actually do?
Well, that it would actually put a chink in the proceedings, although, as you've said, he wants to do it virtually. And the question is, will that constitute a quorum for the Senate Judiciary Committee? it's kind of a new ball game here with the virus, because a lot of business is taking place over, electronically. But there have been rules in place for decades that they have to be there in person to vote. So, that issue, I don't know that would be thrown into the courts, because that's a matter of procedure for the Congress, and usually courts don't get involved in that. But again, all bets are off.
Right. So if they don't give this unanimous consent, it would force the senators. One of the things that has been raised is that those Republican senators who are relying on fighting their close races, like Lindsey Graham in South Carolina, would be forced to return to the Senate to deal with, Democratic intransigence. And that would throw off their timeline. It would also endanger their own races and help hand the Senate to Democrats in January. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Absolutely.
What about the U.S. military? If Trump were to, if we talk about coups in other countries, very often the military is involved. And Trump has had a very interesting relationship with the military. He has, of course, allowed them to run roughshod over other countries and escalated certain wars. But then he's also drawn their ire for undermining them. National security officials have been very upset. Former intelligence officers and national security officers in huge numbers have openly supported Joe Biden. If Trump were to somehow need to turn to the military, which of course is again mind-blowing that we're discussing this, where do you think the military would go?
Well, I think it depends on the leadership. 89 former defense officials signed a letter when Trump sent the National Guard into Washington, D.C. on June 1st to clear out a peaceful protest so he could walk over to a church and have a photo op holding a Bible, which he probably never read. And they were just incensed. People were incensed, and he used tear gas, chemical weapons against protesters, peaceful protesters, so he could have his photo op. You know, it kind of reminds me, Sonali, of him riding around in a car with Secret Service being exposed to him, testing positive for COVID so he can have a photo op. It's just beyond the pale. And, speaking of COVID, the 25th Amendment might come into play depending upon how sick he is. There have been contradictory reports coming out of the doctors and the White House. And some of the things that he has had, some of the treatments are only given to people who are very sick. Now, he might have strong-armed them and said, look, I want this treatment. I'm the president. But if he gets worse, he could, under the 25th Amendment, turn over the reins to Pence. I don't think he'll do that. If he's really ill and Pence and a majority of the cabinet or a body designated by Congress decides that he's unable to fulfill his functions, they can remove him and put Pence in charge. And Pence would be the acting president until the election. Pence would get, or whoever the RNC decides would be the new nominee, would be on the ballot and would get all the votes that have been cast for Trump already. So this COVID, Trump's COVID case, saying nothing about his criminal responsibility for the deaths of more than 200,000 people and the infections of over 7 million people, I think it's criminal. I think it's manslaughter at a minimum, and possibly second degree murder, which is a conscious disregard of a high degree risk of death. You don't even have to have an intent to kill. He knew in March, he told Bob Woodward that he knew how deadly it was. But his own infection is really the wild card here. And after months of poo-pooing, mask wearing and social distancing and exposing who knows how many people in his inner circle, reporters, people in, ironically, in the Rose Garden announcing Barrett's nomination, lots of people were infected. But his own infection and the extent of it, because he is high risk, is a wild card in this whole thing. And I wrote in my piece, and I believe it's the chickens coming home to roost without being disrespectful.
Earlier in the year, in fact, Attorney General William Barr had suggested that knowingly spreading COVID could be seen as a terrorist act, could be seen as violation of terrorism laws. This was sometime in March or April. And I want to pick up on what you said around Trump's criminal negligence. Some have suggested, me among them, in a column that I wrote on Salon, that the Democrats ought to launch new impeachment proceedings now around his criminal negligence on COVID. If you look at the lengthy list of crimes he has committed and ethical lapses leading to the death of at least 150,000 Americans, blows everything else out of the water. And not only would it help to focus attention on this at the time of the election. It could also potentially help derail the Senate's plan to steal the election through the Supreme Court. I'm wondering if you have any ideas or opinions on that.
I think it's a good point you make, Sonali, but I don't think they'll do that.
Sure.
I don't think Republicans have the stomach.
What they should do and what they will do, two different things, certainly.
Exactly. But in terms of the of what Barr said about it being a terrorist act, when HIV and AIDS was an epidemic, and fortunately it's largely, although not completely, under control now. If someone was HIV positive or had full-blown AIDS and knowing that had sex with someone, they were charged and have been charged with attempted murder. And this is no different than that. And Trump apparently had a positive test before he made it public. He went on Fox News without saying anything about his positive test. Who knows how many people he has personally infected and allowed to be infected while he's criticizing Joe Biden for wearing a mask. Joe Biden, who has been very smart about it and very cautious, who knows how many people are testing positive now because of Trump's what you call criminal negligence. It could be actually intentional murder.
Right. It was in March of this year, people who intentionally spread the coronavirus could face charges, criminal charges under federal terrorism laws. According to the Justice Department, Trump has already announced he intends on returning to the White House on Monday. All of his staff are at risk. I mean, he certainly doesn't live there all by himself or just with Melania. There are people that do have to tend to him, feed him, and all of those people would be at risk outside of the Secret Service members that he risked during his joyride. And of course, we know, we've been told and we've seen over and over again that laws don't apply to the so-called law and order president, apparently. And to pick up on what you said with Joe Biden, he has tested negative twice now. He's been very careful. But Republicans and the Trump campaign are actually blaming Biden for not having caught the virus. This is another sort of new campaign tactic. And Republican supporters of Trump are spreading conspiracy theories, wondering, why is it that only Republicans are getting infected? Maybe it's the Democrats that are behind this somehow. I mean, it's mind-blowing.
Trump is notorious for blaming other people for everything bad that he's doing. It reminds me of that old saying, when you're being run out of town, get in front of the crowd and make it look like a parade. And that's quintessential Trump. But there is a vice presidential debate coming up. And apparently the Republican campaign and the Democratic campaign don't agree on how far apart the two candidates have to be. The Democrats want them, I believe, to be 12 feet apart. And the Republicans say, oh, 7 feet is enough. And of course, Biden was on the stage with Trump 2 days before Trump's public positive result was divulged. So he is, the Republicans who are enabling Trump, he couldn't do it by himself, enabling Trump, it's phenomenal. They are playing with people's lives, literally, and it's just inexcusable.
Marjorie, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article from our website. Again, just amazing that we are discussing these things about the United States of America. This is what we have come to. Always appreciate your analysis. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sonali.
Marjorie Cohn has been my guest. She's a professor emerita at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law and a writer for Truth Out. Her latest piece is entitled, Trump Needs Accomplices at Every Level of Government to Pull Off a Coup. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. On our website, you can sign up for our daily newsletter and also find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.